Hi, everyone. Welcome to the 18 Summer Show. We are your hosts, Jim
and Jamie Shields. We're here to help you bring family back.
In the last decade, we've helped thousands of families create the family life that you have always wanted.
We give you simple solutions on how you can ignite your family life and succeed in both business and at home.
And please remember, time is of the essence. You only have 18 summers to truly connect with your children.
So let us help you make the most of it.
Greetings, 18 Summers Tribe. Good to be back with you again today. I'm excited about today's interview because this has been a longtime friend and business mentor of mine, Mr. Daniel Marcos. Daniel, welcome. Thanks for being here today.
Always a pleasure, amigo. How are you?
Yes, thank you, amigo. We've had lots of good times together. Some of you already know Daniel was co-founder of Growth Institute, one of my oldest business mentors. Vern Harnish and him started it and are now helping businesses worldwide scale up, thousands and thousands of businesses, including mine. In fact, when I have to break it down to the top three, Daniel and Vern and their principles are easily some of the things that have grown and made my business successful through unknown times, through the pandemic and everything. Also, Daniel and I have had to have a lot of family time together. He's attended retreat with his family. I've gotten to spend time at his properties down in Mexico. So it's an honor to have you here again, buddy. I really do appreciate this.
As always. Thank you, amigo.
Yes, thank you. So I think today, let's just start with a little bit about your personal experience as an entrepreneur and as a family man. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because obviously our tribe, that's what our tribe is filled with. And I know you've got a great story and insight on that.
I've been an entrepreneur my life. And let me tell the story when I decided that I want to be an entrepreneur. I was probably 10 years or so. I was very young. And I was spending Christmas in uncle's house. He had a ranch in a place called San Benito, Texas. It's in the middle of Texas, a very, very small town called San Benito. And an uncle from Monterrey had this ranch in San Benito. And in this Christmas, he invited all the family to go there. So we're all there, uncles, nephews, everyone having fun. And on Christmas Day, we woke up, opened the presents, and he was all playing with the presents and all that. And I see my father probably around 10 a.m. walking, all dressed up with a tie and everything. And I was like, Dad, why do you have a tie? Well, I just got a call from my boss. I need to go back to Mexico City. And I was like, it's Christmas. I said, yeah, something came up. I need to go back. And I remember I was really mad. So I was crying and having a really hard time because my father just left on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
And I told my mom, hey, why my uncles are here and my father had to go? And he said, well, your father works for someone. He's an employee and he asked to go back. And your uncles are entrepreneurs. They're business owners and they designed their life so they could stay. And that was the first time I realized there was a difference. Before, I had no idea there was a difference. It was like, that's work, right? That was it. Dad and mom work and you make money and that was it. That was the first time I understood there was a difference.
In the sand right there, huh?
Yeah. And that's when I said, I need to be an entrepreneur. So when I was a kid, I did an aquarium and did all these things. But then we did our first company. So I graduated from college, industrial engineering in Mexico, in Monterrey, went to Hong Kong to live for 2 years, and then came back and built my first company. I'm not married, no kids, just when I was very, very young, 25, 26. Internet company, got very lucky. In that moment, I thought I was an amazing entrepreneur. I realized I was lucky. And we built the first fintech in Mexico. And then we partnered with an Argentinian company and a Brazilian company. We raised a bunch of money, like $60 million from JP Morgan and Goldman and the rest. I think the second or third round of a technology company in Latin America by a US big investment bank. And we built three banks, five brokerage houses. It was like the real thing back in 1998, 1999. So we had that, but that's when I began realizing drama. I had no idea. I was a kid, 25, 26, and I was running a business. In my office, I probably had 80, 100 people. But overall, we grew the company to 1,200 employees.
Wow.
By the time we sold it. And I remember I was working at night, probably one or two nights a week. I stayed through the night in the office. My wife, at that moment, she was my fiance, and then we got married through the process. She used to call me and said, are you with someone else? And I was like, I'm in the office. Come whenever you want. And I used to work like until 5 a.m., go to the house, take a shower or whatever, had a nap, an hour, and then come back to the office.
Wow.
It was a lot. Growth was just in four years, really. We went from zero to 1,200 employees, operation 9 countries. It was crazy. And after that, I was having a really hard time. I was enjoying because I was in the magazines and all these panels, everything. But I was not enjoying the amount of work.
Yeah.
And I remember an employee came to my office. She was a girl that used to go to college, or a lady used to go to college. She was working for me in my sales department. And one day she came to my office at night and said, "Hey, I see you're having a hard time." And I was like, "Yeah, really having a hard time." So I kind of, she was a friend of mine in high school and college. So I was kind of open and said, "Yeah, I'm really having a hard time." And today, my husband, as you know, he's an entrepreneur. And he's part of this organization called the Entrepreneurs Organization. Do you want to get invited? And I was like, "Yeah, whatever it works." That's why I joined you. And after that, met Vern, went to Vertigo of Giants program in MIT. And that's when I really began understanding what it was to scaling companies. And now, as they say, the rest is history. I've been an EO member for 23 years. And I've been around a lot of the most brilliant minds. You know, a lot of the friends and people who came to speak at our program, Gathering of Titans at MIT. And that's a group I begin relating to and understanding and learning with. And it was just an amazing experience. But that's when I realized how much drama and how lonely it feels at the top. I get a lot of calls at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning from entrepreneurs really having a hard time. They feel really lonely. They believe they have to have the right answer the next day to figure out what to do. And it's just hard. Indeed. Yeah. Quick story. This is where Vern really understands entrepreneurs. So you get to this place, this program in MIT called Birding of Giants. It's a program that Vern did with Inc. Magazine and MIT. So the first day, you get there like at 2 o'clock, you have class until 6. And at 6, typical dinner time, they say, "Hey, go and have dinner, but you cannot drink because you're going to be here for 4 days. You're going to have to be back in the classroom." So we just had water or an iced tea or whatever, and then come back to the classroom. The second day, we go to dinner like around 6, and it's open bar. And we're like, "What? Yeah, drink, have fun." We're like, "We have class after this." "Ah, don't worry, have fun." So everyone begins drinking and wine and whatever, just having a lot of fun. Now we're more friends. We kind of been 24 hours in the room with someone learning. And at the end, Vern said, "Hey, by the way, we're going to go back to the room like until around 2 o'clock in the morning, take enough drink so you could have enough until 2 o'clock. And I was like, "Okay." People took 2 six-packs and a bottle of wine and just begin going to the room. Vern closes the door and said, "Tonight, the class is called the Night of the Living Death. Every company has been death one night. And the entrepreneur figures out a way of how to bring it back alive. Wow. Every successful company has been death. So I want every one of you to come to the stage and tell your story of the day that your company was dead." And of course, people cried and we shout to each other and we hug. And it was a very emotional night. And it was amazing. And we came out of there at 2 o'clock in the morning just being brothers after that.
And I've seen it.
The group that you've seen.
You guys are still group B. I mean, that's 20 years.
20 years ago. So I went to MIT first time April 2000.
Yeah.
And today we're in 2020. And we still meet every year for 4 days in MIT.
Yeah. I mean, I saw the camaraderie of that group because you guys invited me up to speak that one time about alternative education. A lot of those guys I've known through other leadership groups. You guys had a very tight knit. There was no ego. And you know what's funny? Even in there's, I can say this, there's a few billionaires in that room. No one went in there with perfection. Every conversation that I was a part of that I saw, you guys would say, "Here's where I'm struggling. Here's where I've had it." So it's not like you've reached a certain level where none of this affects. You're just,
and by the way, every time we're there, one is recently divorced. One is having a lot of kids' problems. One is having their best life. A time of the year they just sold and they got at least gazillion dollars of money in their bank. Like, they all have a struggle, as you said, and different struggles, and life comes and goes. And we had people like being sued by their partner or their kids and their father, like all these weird things, right? And they all happen. And that's life of entrepreneur. Yeah. That's what you feel. That's what you, that what is the typical life. But if you're just in your company, you think everything that is happening is just for you. And you're the only one going through that. And you feel very lonely. When you get there, like, everyone's having the same issues. It's like, there's no issue.
We're all crazy together.
That's great.
And how do you go after the drama, Daniel? I love how you talk to me about drama being the enemy, how to face it, you know, both personally and professionally. Like, let's unpack the drama a little bit. Because
if you see the Growth Institute logo, it says Growth Institute. And below we have two phrases. Scale impact and reduce drama. We believe that what gives you freedom as an entrepreneur are two things. First is do what you do bigger. I want to have more impact in my industry. I want to sell more. I want to make more money. I want to employ more people. Whatever you do, you want to do it in a bigger scale. And two, you want to reduce the drama. Everyone said, I love what I'm doing. It's just too much. My wife has told me many times, I really wish sometimes you get a job 9 to 5 and come back at 5 and just be disconnected. So as an example, the first day or second or third day that we're in BOG, they give us this gift. And it was this like device with a pen with this like a block note, very small. And whenever you put the pen out, a small light comes in the paper so you could write on the paper. And I was like, I am the only one that wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning with all these things on the mind. I was like, no, like every entrepreneur does it. Like, you can't imagine how many times I've been asleep. And then like at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I was like, an idea or something. And I need to write it. But if I turn on the light, I wake up my wife. So it's just, there's the thing for entrepreneurs. And they give it to everyone. And I was like, oh my God, this is great. Because we just have those nights. And that's part of the drama. Yeah. And people, everyone talks about the glamour and the magazines and the money. They don't talk about the struggle. They don't talk about the family problems. They don't talk about the financial problems. You see other entrepreneurs on the outside. You think they're super wealthy and they're doing great. When you see their bank account, oh my God. Like, I've had conversations with people fail in their company. And I say, well, you've been in your company for 15 years, so you have a decent nest egg. And we're like, no, I invested everything for growth. My house is mortgaged. My cars have leases. I have no savings. That's the drama, right? What I did understand until I met Vern. And I thought I was the only one living it. And I thought I felt this guilt or sentiment that I was a terrible executor. And then you realize everyone has it.
Yeah.
We get more calls at the Growth Institute by people saying, I don't need to grow. I need to redo the drama. I need to go on vacation. I haven't been on vacation for 3 years. Like, I have been able to go to bed one day at 9 p.m. and sleep for 8 hours in the last 5 years. That's drama. And if you have drama in the company, that drama gets to your personal life, and then you put that drama on your family.
I agree. It all bleeds across the line. It's an integration, and if there's blood on one shoulder, it's going to get to the other shoulder, you know, and that's what I always say. And you and I have talked about this, but number one step, you know, there's some people going, I got drama right now. Obviously, they can't go through all the great things that you've taught me over the years, but what would you say the number one step right now? Someone's making their way through the pandemic. There's been changes. What is the number one step to reducing drama and getting things under control?
Again? Communication. The number one thing that kills companies or creates drama is lack of communication. Yeah. As entrepreneurs, we believe if we give data and information to our employees, they're going to see how much money we're making, or they're going to see how much money we're not making, and they will be disappointed or whatever. And we want to control all the data. No.
Yeah.
Open the data, like show them the strategy, open the data. And by the way, as entrepreneurs or leaders, we talk with our head of sales, we have a strategy of sales, and then head of operation, then head of finance. And then when finance is having a problem with sales, they don't talk to each other. So finance calls you, and then you have to call sales and then you're in the middle. Communicate data and open data, then finance is going to be able to read the data and go to sales and have a conversation. And that's when they remove you from the center. Communication has two things. First is write your strategy, simple format. And that's the one-page strategic plan that we teach at Scaling Up. And then the second thing is have a system of communication so everyone in the company knows what we're focusing, who's responsible to do what and by when, and have a measure of success. Have a dashboard with colors and know exactly where we are. If you do that, you will significantly reduce drama. This year, we all had complicated days in March, and I fired 3 people. And when I call them and say, hey, I need to have a conversation, they say, yeah, don't worry, I know. They have so much data and they knew they were missing. The 3 of them said, you don't even have to call me. I know I haven't done anything. Like, I haven't pulled my own weight. So don't worry, thank you very much. Just how much are you going to give me as severance? And that's it. No discussion, no drama, no nothing.
What a reduction too. You didn't tell me, I mean, when you set those clear benchmarks, it, like you said, it reduces. And communication, I love that you said that. And to give you a plug right here, a week into the pandemic, I got on with my real estate team, you know, and we were doing well. Like, you know, you've talked to me, we were on a really nice trajectory. I didn't know what that was going to mean. Nobody knew, was this going to be another 2008? What was the factors going to be? But I got on our morning huddle, which you taught me, you and Vern, and I said, look, I've been through tough times before and survived. 2008, here are the numbers. Here's what happened. Here's what we did. And we survived and we came through. Everyone on this call right now, because we have a really small but powerful team that does volume, I said, everyone's important. Everyone's staying in the place and we're going to figure out a way to this together. I said, but one thing I don't want to happen just because of that, our morning huddle does not leave. We are going to really lean deeper into this. We need to communicate because there's going to be fears and this and drama getting thrown around. And we kept that morning huddle. And I just did our review. We took our team to the Bahamas last week because we broke records for the year. And I asked, and they said it really helped for you to communicate that. Like, hey, we know there's could be issues, but we're all staying together. We got this. But they said that daily huddle removed so many things so quickly, right out of the way. Just picked it up, got it removed, got it handled. That we doubled our business in 6 months through the pandemic, doubled it. And that one thing reduced the drama and produced the communication to keep everyone relaxed and seeing the prize, seeing the goal.
You know, my team, I have a lot of young millennials and young team in Growth Institute. Yeah. And when all this happened, I said, guys, we're going to double our dailies. We're going to have a daily 8:07 in the morning and 4:47 in the afternoon. I want you to see my face and hear my voice twice a day, everyone in the company. So if I'm struggling, I'm going to let you know. If I'm relaxed and I like what I'm seeing, I'm going to let you know. But I want you to have the option to see me through my eyes and my face twice a day.
So simple.
And today they said, Daniel, you can't imagine. At the beginning, by the way, I reacted really, really fast and I did a lot of really big changes. You know, I had a mortgage bank in 2008 and I got destroyed.
Yeah.
So this time I moved really, really fast. And at the beginning, everyone said, my boss is crazy, he's having all this reaction. And then with time, they saw their friends and their parents begin having all these issues. And we were already, indeed, April was our best month in history. March was a really bad month. April was the best month in history. So by the time we're already doing much, much better, they looked at me and said, like, now we understand what you did. But at the beginning was like, he's crazy because I began reacting really, really fast. Just to give you an idea. Before the end of March, I had canceled my office in Mexico and the US. I said, this pandemic is going to be a year thing. I'm going to cancel both my offices. So I called my landlords and I said, I need an out before the end of March. And they was like, what do you mean? We're going to be out in 3 months. And I was like, no, I don't want an office. And I canceled both my offices. But that was $20,000 of payments a month that I did not want to have.
Right there.
Recoup.
Right there. And the team reacted to you by putting those personal, those rhythms into place. You said not only 8:07, but 4:47. And that's one of the things that you've taught me that I think bleeds into personal and professional is setting those rhythms. How do people start to set them? Because they act like it's like this great scientific algorithm that's so hard to figure out. And they're not. How do people start to set some of these simple, powerful rhythms to get the results you and I are talking about?
So human being, we need systems and rituals and processes and systems. I'll give you an example. When you have a baby, the first thing they tell you to a new mom or a new dad said, the first thing you have to do is put a rhythm to your baby. They wake up at the same time, they eat at the same time, they go to bed at the same time. If you give that routine, you set them free and that allows them to start growing. Yep. Same thing happens with human beings. So as an example, for me, the most important ritual that I have is I wake up at 5 a.m. every day and I spend between 5 and 7 just for me. The morning ritual, we've all heard about it. The people that I admire the most, they always spend 2 hours in the morning dedicated to them. If you wake up already with the alarm, shouting to your kids, go and take a shower, you have so much drama in the morning, you come to the office and you bring all that drama, right?
Yeah.
I wake up at 5. By 7, I already did some exercise. I already read at least 30 minutes so I could learn and get something into my brain. I had a good cup of coffee. Like, I hear music. I love to hear music and sometimes dance in the morning. I put my headphones and just hear some good music. And by 7 a.m., my wife is just waking up. My kids are waking up. And I'm just like full of energy. My wife looks at me like, relax, relax. And I was like, I've been 2 hours just gaining energy. And then you could start giving energy to the world.
Yeah.
So the best entrepreneurs, they understand the routines. They understand that space they need. They understand the rituals and they just protect the rituals.
Yeah, tell us about protecting because that's so important. You can create them, but then all of a sudden you just try to cheapen them in your own mind. Oh, I don't need that time. Daniel can be this strong of a Daniel without those 2 hours or without the morning huddle.
I've said that. And every time I do it or I say that, I get in trouble.
Yeah.
Every time. Every time. So remember when it was 2008, I had a really rough time. I had to fire 120 people in a couple of weeks. I lost a lot of capital. It was rough. I was depressed. I was waking 2 o'clock in the morning, sweating cold, crying some nights. And of course, my relationship with my wife was a disaster. I was not really having fun with my daughter and really playing with her. And I'd been having all these issues. And I remember one day I woke up, middle of the night, went to my living room, and I was like, how can I get out of this? Like, what do I have to start? And then I realized I was not doing my morning rituals. I was not doing my morning stuff. Wow. I said, okay, I'm going to go out and I'm going to start running and doing exercise. I was so overweight. I was so tired, so stressed. I couldn't run. So I said, I don't care. I'm going to put my headphones and I'm going to walk. And if I have to walk for an hour a day, I was waking up 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning already. I was living back then in Austin. I used to put my headphones and just go out and walk. And yeah, sometimes I walk 5-10 miles in the morning before I came back.
Wow.
And just waking up every day, breathing air, seeing the sun come up, it just begin to give me all this energy. And little by little, I begin fixing my life. And then 2 years later, it was doing great. But that was a process that I said, what can I control? That is 100% my control. Waking up in the morning, having my morning ritual, and start getting energy. And that was it. And that was all the two things.
And what I love about that is you're not listing, you have to get these 17 rituals going or you're screwed, Daniel. You started with one. One. It's funny. I think I go back to two. What am I doing in the morning? And am I keeping my morning huddle? Those are the two things that I really, and when I say to people, I say something I've learned and then what you guys taught me, those two things, I can deviate from them, but it's like driving a car with flat tires that are slowly going down even further.
Great. Guess,
overall, what holds people back from setting the rituals?
Lazy, personal strength and said, hey, I'm going to do it and I'm going to do it. Like, yeah, as an example, taking a shower, cold shower in the morning, right? I live in Toronto. Sometimes it's snowing. It's really, really cold. And I try to have most of the days before I turn off the water, just put it in really, really cold and stay there for a couple of minutes, right? And people said, you're crazy. And I was like, first, it's great for the blood on your body. Wakes you up and all that. But also, it's part of the discipline that I go through my body with a painful thing like this by choice every day.
Yeah.
And then you said like, wow, I did this. I could do that. And then you could tackle many other big things the rest of the day. So when I woke up in the morning and I do all these things, sometimes I just stay in bed. I watch through the window and it's snowing and it's like, oh, that one to wake up at 5. No. Wake every day, do all your rituals, and it's amazing. Do it for a week and your life's going to change dramatically.
I agree totally.
So the other day, quick story. I had been coaching this great CEO in Guatemala. And I told him about the morning ritual and then the daily huddle. And it's a guy that pays me a lot of money per day. So he called me and said, hey, for the quarterly, I want you to come an extra day because I want to spend one more day with you. And I said, fine. So we both woke up at 5 a.m. I was in my hotel, I was in his house. We did extras, whatever, 7 a.m. He picked me up. We had his morning ritual at 7:47. It was for him. And we finished. I said, okay, great. What's next? And the guy said, I'm done. And I was like, what do you mean you're done? He said, I already finished everything I had to do in the day. So, what do you want to do? And I was like, you're paying me a lot of money to be here. Like, what do you want to do? And the guy said, I want to go and talk. So let's go out and walk and talk. And I was like, okay. That's so we went walking in the forest and just went and talk. But the guy said, I finished. Like, I already did everything I had to do in the morning. My kids are in school, like all that. My team went through a daily huddle. Everyone knows what they have to do. There's no emergencies. Let's go and walk. And that was it.
I love it. What a great example too.
Having your day done by 8 a.m.
Oh. It's inspiring, isn't it? I mean, some people will go, that's BS. I'm like leaning in going, okay, I'm listening. No, but I love in that it's two birds on one stone. It's going to pull you out. It's going to reduce drama at the same time. And as you saw, like, and I know you and I have had conversations as we've both regrown, you start to see things. It's almost like things slow down. You know, they're not quite at full speed. They're at about 75%. So you can see things coming a little easier and be able to respond to them. And it all starts with those two things, I think. So I'm glad that we were able to hammer down on those. Those are so important for everyone, you know, in our 18 Summers group, 95% of our people own their own business. Yeah. So this is absolutely key, getting back to the core. It's like when someone goes into a personal trainer and they says, okay, we got to look at your diet and exercise. And the person goes, yeah, could we start someplace else? Oh. You know that they're doomed. I knew you were going to hammer home on this today. And that's one of the many reasons I wanted to have you home, just because you've been such a mentor and inspiration. And I think sometimes people hear, oh my gosh, Daniel Marcos, Vern Harnish, these huge organizations, but they all start with simple core rhythms and principles. And then when you lock in and continually do them, you can see the results that, you know, you're sharing and doing for so many.
Wake up at 5 a.m. for a month, do exercise, have your coffee, learn something, and just tell me what happened after 30 days. Yeah, it's just experiment. The transformation of your life is incredible. It's unbelievable.
For sure. I know you've heard some of our shows before, and something that has come become a tradition to finale the show is, a lot of us, you know, heard the question, what would you say to 21-year-old Daniel? Well, you're like, oh, well, it's 21-year-old Daniel. He was clueless. He didn't know. Through the pandemic, we started to look at the other way. And I started to ask myself about a weekend. I think I told you the story. I just was hit with something. My daughter was in front of me. I was feeling overwhelmed. And she was going, Daddy, why are you mad at me? And I didn't even see her standing there. I was handling texts when I shouldn't have for work and trying to help an entrepreneur who was in trouble. Anyway, I said, what would my 75-year-old self say to me right now? What advice would that 75-year-old self? Hopefully he's got a little hair still. He's still surfing, still, you know, creating. And for me that day, Danny said, oh, man. You know, you've been through tough times before. You'll be through them again. You got this. You know, enjoy this, these toddler meltdowns and the teen grumpiness. It's not going to be here forever. And taking that advice from my older self helped. So we just started to ask all our guests, and the answers have been profound. So knowing how much of an influence you've had on me, let's look, you know, years down the road to 75-year-old Daniel, wiser, you know, been through more. What advice do you think he'd give today, the 75-year-old Daniel?
Enjoy your ride. And enjoy everything of the ride, because the hard times, you have to enjoy them. They're part of life. They're part of doing what you like. When I was going through all the closing of my company and losing all this money, it was really painful. Now I look back and I was like, oh my God, it was so important that I went through it. So let me, and I'll tell you a story that I think this will resemble this.
Please.
So when I went and shut down my company, I lost a lot of capital from investors. It was a really rough moment in my life. And I got several calls and stuff, but I got one letter that changed my life and changed my whole story then. And it was a letter that my parents wrote. Mm-hmm. And on the letter, there was a lot of, and by the way, my father is 76 now, 77. And this was 10 years ago, but he's very wise. And he said, life gives you these short moments to learn very, very fast. But because you're suffering so much pain, you're not learning. We ask that you bring things to the table and we have a conversation so you could at least learn. Because it's an amazing opportunity in your life.
Yeah.
Because it's so much painful, you don't even want to live it. You're trying to blind your eyes and not even analyze it and understand what happened. We have to enjoy what happened and really bring it out.
Yeah.
So I called my dad next day and said, yeah, that's what to recommend. And my dad said, so my mom goes to all these yoga and all these retreats of women doing all this. And it's great. She's grown a lot. And my father, he has a PhD in economics. So he's all by numbers, right? And my dad support my mom has done many of these trips. And he said, I go with your mom and I think there's a lot of people are pretty crazy there, but there's one guy that I really like. Why don't we ask the guy to, if we could hire him for a couple of days and let's have a discussion and a moderate discussion by him. And I said, perfect, let's do it. So this guy lives in Montana. He has a community in Montana. He's the head of the community. And my dad invited him to come to Austin for 2 days. And we went in the room and the rule was there has to be a room just with a chair so people are going to be there. No table, no paintings on the walls. Nothing. I want white walls and that's it. And we went in for 2 days. Wow, what a weekend. It was rough. Mm. But I could say that's exactly when I touched bottom and I started coming back.
Yeah.
So even of the tough moments, you have to enjoy them and you have to live them. It's part of life.
And well, and like you said, if you enjoy them, I would guarantee from our conversations and experiences together, you probably pull upon lessons from that week that still, it's almost like there's a punch being thrown at you and you're just kind of like, whoop, now I know that. And you have a big smile because you're like, oh, I saw that coming a mile away. And that knowledge, I pull from 08 lessons all the time still. And I almost feel it's like an unfair advantage now. Still not perfect, still a lot to learn. But there is a core entrepreneur within me that was not half the entrepreneur before 08.
So when all of this happened, I was, as I said, having a really hard time. And my father and my mom were there a lot. And when all of this started, I remember that weekend, I called my parents and said, guys, this time is going to be completely different. My business is doing great. I have all this cash in the bank. Like, my relationship with my wife is great. My kids are perfect. Like, it was night and day, 2008 compared to this March.
Me too. And I feel very lucky. It was hard earned.
It was hard. My March was a really scary month.
Yeah.
But everybody, yes, it was very scary. But even with all of that, I knew, and my life was set in a way that I had a lot of rituals, knowledge, savings, structure, that I knew I was going to go through it with much, much less pain than last year, than last time.
Yeah. And if we had more time, we won't do it today, but I know through our conversations, the pandemic, I love how you pivoted. You didn't stop an inch going from, well, there's not live events, so live events are done, so we're done. You pivoted and took things online and built the online education. And I watched you do it, and it was impressive. And just that pivoting, your eyes were wide open going into the pandemic. So that is something that I tried to encourage all the families. Let's keep our eyes open. Let's see what the opportunities are. And it kind of ties into your enjoy the ride.
Just this year, in the fourth quarter, we're having over double the revenue than on the first quarter. Just this year.
Yeah.
Because of that.
And we're the same. We sold more houses this summer, through the pandemic summer, more properties than we did in all of 2019, just in the summer.
Couldn't go see the houses, and you had all these issues.
But it gave us things. Oh, we don't have to do that. We can go keyless entry. We can market things differently. We can build in areas that are low density. There were all sorts of things we could do, and that's the pivot.
So when people ask, "Hey, what's one of the most important things that happened, or you learn, or," and I said, "My clients realized and learned that online education could be even better than live education or in-person education." And I've been begging. I have Growth Institute 8 years ago, and I was begging people to do online. And they said, "No, I'll pay you 3 times, but you travel and you come here." Remember, I used to be on the plane a lot.
All the time? Yeah.
I haven't gone into a plane since March 11th. Last year, I flew 200,000 miles last year.
Yeah.
This year, I haven't been on a plane since March 11th.
Yeah.
You
had a conviction of the online, but I think both you and I share this, and this is a conversation I've had with a lot of entrepreneurs. I love my family talks, but there's going to be a scaling back of people seeing me live and a scaling up of the impact I have. Because I like being able to see you, but I like to be home too. I wouldn't have realized that if I hadn't slowed down, if I hadn't been looking around going, oh, I don't need to fly everywhere necessarily. And that's been just huge aha.
I've had so much fun with my kids. Like, my kid just had he had a tournament, chess tournament, and he won.
Lucas won.
Yeah, Lucas.
Good for him.
And hey. Last year, he went to the tournament. I think he lost on the first one. And this time, he won it. And that's the time we spent together playing games. And like, it's a big change. And I was here for 9 months or 10 months every day. Yeah. And that was huge. I will never change that time with my kids in the whole world for all this. So even though we've been far away, and I've told you, I'm leaving Canada today. Canada has been pretty short. I haven't traveled. I haven't seen my family in 10 months. My parents and stuff, it's been great for my family. My internal family with Lucas, Camila, and my wife has been amazing.
Us too. And what a gift that is. And that's where I see it. There were some setbacks. There were some changes. There were some concerns. But our family's grown closer together. Yeah. And I wouldn't change that. I don't like to see anyone else getting hurt or struggling, but I would not change the time I have with my family. And I'm very, very grateful for that.
And I will never come back to the amount of trouble I was having for.
Me neither. I think that's been an entrepreneur agreement along all lines. So people said, why? I'm not going to do it that much anymore. I'll still come and set up our fun trips together like that. But some of the intermediary things, Daniel, I'm just, no, I'll do this. And people will still get the impact. They'll still get the potency. And I'll still be able to run downstairs and jump in the pool with my family right after the interview. There is something to that. I think you and I are better and sharper than we ever were 2 years ago.
I agree 100%.
Amigo, how can people, obviously, you know, I'm always telling people about you. How can people learn more about you?
Growth Institute, that's our company. I have a program that I teach people how to understand their company. And I have, it's free. It's like 2.5 hours lecture that I give. And I'll send you the link. I think it's growthinstitute.com/.
We'll send it out with show notes if you
send it. Or something. But so here's just the last thing. Companies, like human beings, we have stages. We're babies, kids, adolescents, adults. And I get entrepreneurs said, hey, give me the best book. And I was like, it's like you're going to a doctor and said, give me the most potent medicine. Like, no.
Yeah.
They're going to have to make a diagnosis, see what you're sick of, and then give you the medicine of what you're sick. Same thing happens with the books and methodologies and tools. It's very different if you have an online business with 2 employees than a large business with 10,000, right? So in this lecture, I show people kind of how companies grow on stages and what you need in each stage and what you really have to learn. Because if you're trying to feed a 2-year-old kid beer or $10,000 wine, it's an amazing wine. They just can't drink it, right?
If I send you a book on breastfeeding, I have teenagers. I think there's a disconnect there. There's not going to work.
But people do that in business all the time.
Agreed.
All the time.
Yeah. Like infancy and old age are very two different things. And businesses feel that.
So we have this lecture just to explain people where they are so they know what they have to do.
I love that. Well, anyway, everyone knows I've talked about you all the time. You know, the daily huddle is when people say, where do you start? I say, this is where I start. I believe in rhythms. The daily huddle for business that I learned from Daniel and Vern. It's a starting point. You talked about the morning ritual, you know, getting rid of drama. I'm a huge proponent. I love you. Our families have gotten to spend a lot of great quality time together. I really appreciate it. As I always say, it's always an honor working with business mentors, families back to me. And you're obviously one of the heads. And so I just appreciate the pieces. So, you know, thanks for being here.
Thank you, amigo. We've done 3 trips. With our kids, with you.
Yeah.
It's like any other business friend or whatever. I've never done a trip with our kids. With you, I've done 3.
I know.
That changed the life with, and the relationship with my kids. And you, I think in 18 summers, you got it so right. To spend 3 days one-on-one, not more than one, with your kids. It just changed completely the conversation, the dynamics, everything. You know, my daughter is going to boarding school in the next month. And I told her, hey, we need to figure out how I'm going to go to your school every 3 months to our boarding.
Yeah, I love it.
And we're going to put dates and I'm going to have to fly to New Hampshire every 3 months. It's like,
you'll never regret it either.
Never regret it. I will never. I know, like, but I know I'm going to have to be there every 3 months to have a conversation with her. Not on the phone and not send chats. Like, no, I would spend 4 hours with her once every quarter, just spend time with her and be able to have that connection.
I love it, amigo. I'm blessed to know that it's doing something for Camila and Lucas and the whole family. So anything I can do, you know, I'm here. We love you at 18 Summers. You continue to help and inspire me. I know we'll cross paths again. We're always sharing things back and forth, sharing stages. You've been a huge help. You know, I want to make sure we continue to grow together. And I really appreciate our friendship and consulting back and forth.
And I'll be on the next trip. Lucas getting on the age that he needs to learn how to surf.
I'm ready to see my buddy Lucas again. I'm ready.
Thank you, amigo.
Take care, amigo. Take care.
Same.